Visiting today with Roger Marshall, 1st District Congressman, also a candidate for U.S. Senate here in 2020, joins us here at the this hotel in Manhattan. Congressman Marshall, we sure appreciate the time.
Yeah, Brandon, always good to come back home to my alma mater. Glad to be back here. I've snuck in and out a couple times the last several weeks, but here for the weekend, looking forward to a fun weekend.
Yeah. What brings you first off to Manhattan specifically?
Well, we're going to have a roundtable with some veterans tomorrow morning, and we also got a couple political events, one tonight and one tomorrow as well.
Okay, very good. Well, it's been a busy time in Washington, D.C., I know, and as most of the country knows, you're dealing with a pandemic and several other issues right now. But we start today with a new bill that was introduced in the House this week on police reform, a companion bill, I guess, to the Senate bill was introduced as well. Tell us a little bit more about what this House bill does and the chances of it passing.
Yeah, so I'm very proud to be a co-sponsor of this legislation. And Brandon, I don't know if you know this, but my dad was the chief of police in El Dorado for 25 years. And certainly I think my dad taught me right from wrong. He taught me about law and order. And everywhere I go in Kansas, people want to make sure that we still have law and order. So as these riots have broken out and there's vandalism and looting, I just want Kansans to know that first and foremost to me is law and order. At the same time, we all witnessed the very tragic death of George Floyd, and there is concern about maybe sometimes a few bad police have done some bad things. So we need to hold those officers accountable. And so what this legislation is doing is really upping the bar, raising the bar really to a level what my dad would have expected of his officers. So what this legislation does is it provides more training for police officers, and then also there's going to be more transparency and more accountability as well. So if an officer does something that is deemed wrong, that it would follow him. So if he's going to apply for another police department, another sheriff's office, that record would follow him.
Obviously, there's been calls for all sorts of things in the wake of that incident in Minnesota. Ending systemic racism in that is at the key of many of these protests that are happening. How do you accomplish that, if it's even possible?
Well, listen, I don't think there's systemic racism. You know, again, I grew up, I knew so many police officers, and today I know many police officers. I don't consider any of them racist. I don't believe that there is systemic racism. But regardless, I do think that the police officers can do a better job, that we can train them. I think one of the biggest challenges that the public needs to realize is what we expect of our police officers. I remember my dad having to be, of course, a traffic cop and do investigations, those types of things, break up fights. But he also had to be a social worker, a marital counselor, a mental health specialist, a firefighter, a medic as well. So we expect an awful lot out of our police officers. One of the big challenges I see today is mental health and also just the homelessness that we have. And we expect the police officers to manage all of those issues. So I think we're expecting a lot of our police officers, and what I can't imagine is this defunding. Who in the world would think defunding the police officers is what we should be doing? No, we need to be spending more money on them, and maybe we need to try to give them some specialists, some help with that mental health situation or the social work situations out there.
Would you be in favor of maybe more minorities getting into the police? How do I rephrase that? Would you be in favor of maybe more opportunities for minorities in policing as well?
You know, absolutely. And I do think there is that emphasis to try to get more minority police officers. I think it's a great idea, a great concept, and we need to get our officers more ingrained in the community as well. Again, programs that my dad launched 40 years ago, programs that I've seen happen in Great Bend, Kansas, where we have police officers in the local schools talking about the problems with drugs and alcohol at a very early age and engaging them, having a real relationship with the youth. Listen, police officers are our friends. They're not the enemy. We need to be supporting our police officers. We are already having struggles trying to get quality people to apply for this job. Look, you don't make much money at it. It's a thankless job. What we're doing right now is just grinding this great profession down, a profession I have a great deal of respect for.
All right. Well, moving on to some other issues here. You will have a roundtable here on Saturday. And I know one of the big things you've been advocating for here since your time in office is helping veterans' mental health, and in particular ending veterans' suicide. And I understand there's more work being done in Washington on that.
Right. So the president and the VA have launched another plan to help with suicide, more detailed, and involving more telemedicine. We've already have a hotline out there as well. So I want to try to communicate some other challenges and opportunities we have to decrease the number of veteran suicides.
So with this new roadmap here to curbing veteran suicide, it looks like there's four key platforms to that.
Right. So I've just been so proud to work with Secretary Wilkie with the Veterans Affairs. You know, and as a physician, I know there's not just one cause to suicide. It's always multifactorial. So this is a multi-pronged approach. This is a strategy we've been working on for several years. And you're right. There are four prongs approach to this. We have more programs, more research, more policy development, as well as communication strategy. Look, one of the things that I've found in dealing with suicide, especially for veterans, is that veterans need to be part of a team. And when they leave the military, often they're get lost in society. And I'm so proud of some of the programs we have in Manhattan and Junction City already, where we're trying to plug them into different teams and doing different education programs with them as well. K-State has a program. We have a farm project as well. We're teaching veterans how to farm, trying to get them jobs as well, get them in to be some part of a team.
Okay, very good. And, of course, lots going on in agriculture. This COVID-19 pandemic has put a lot of pressure on agriculture, especially the beef industry. What's being done to maybe curb some of that?
Well, listen, we have a $19 billion program we're rolling out for agriculture. And part of that's to help the cattle industry, the row crop industry as well. And one of the things I'm really proud of, though, is the farmer to market, direct to market programs we have going on. So I was just at a facility yesterday where we're packaging vegetables grown right here in Kansas and boxing them up and getting to people who need the help as well. Other boxes are going fresh beef as well as USDA milk products as well. So trying to make sure that we have getting more food to more people. I had a phone call with one of the undersecretaries today as well. All the food programs we have for the youth going on as well. It's trying to make sure that every kid that was getting those free and reduced lunches in the school system is getting some type of special help this summer as well. And indirectly, that all helps Kansas agriculture. For the first time ever, there is money rolling out as we speak to those cattle guys. But probably even more importantly, as we've kept the packing plants are almost back to full operation, so we got somewhere to go with our beef.
All right, very good. And then people will be happy to hear that, you know, because the beef prices have, I've seen at the grocery store, they've gone way up.
Yeah, that's what I understand. So it's kind of crazy that the farmer, the rancher are getting less, but it's higher at the supermarket. So the problem has been there's been a bottleneck in the feedlots. Very proud, though, of the work we've done there. Most of the states, their packing plants shut down completely. We got down to about 50% capacity. But through testing and just that community working together, they've been able to not just slow down that curve, but to actually knock the top off the mountain. So we're very proud of the work of the communities there in Southwest Kansas.
Where would you say we are in terms of this pandemic coming to an end? Are we going to see a second wave, do you think?
Well, that's a good question. You know, over the past 2 weeks, I've touched all three of the corners of the state, been in, I think, 55, 60 communities. And I would tell you, we're probably 95% back open. I was driving through Belleville Wednesday night, couldn't find a motel room. I had to run to Concordia, got the last room there. Friday night, hotel in Olathe, there was no rooms available. So look, we're back and open. So far, we have not seen a big second peak of this virus. So far, so good. I encourage people to keep doing what we've been doing, which is, you know, practice your social distancing, washing your hands regularly, all the common sense approach. And I think Kansans are really good with common sense.
All right. Well, you know, I know a lot of people still hurting out there economically. It's going to take a while to recover from all this. Is there any plans for a second stimulus?
Well, we'll see. You know, so far, of the $2 trillion Congress funded, only half of it has hit Main Street right so far. You know, we just gave the state of Kansas $82 million for more testing. We gave the state of Kansas $1.25 billion at the end of April. That money's not hit the street yet. The governor's just recently announced how that's going to be distributed. So let's see where that money lands. Going forward, the most important thing we do this summer is addressing liability issues. So when we open up the K-State campus this fall and a student gets sick, is that we don't want the president or the faculty be sued because that happens. We want everyone to do common sense, practice good common sense, but some people are going to get sick. So we need liability protection. The same way at all the workplaces in town, we want to do everything we can to protect our employees and to protect our customers, but they need some liability protection.
Very good. We're in the midst of a political season. We're starting to hear more of the campaign ads. How is the campaign for Senate going for you right now?
Well, it's been a great couple weeks. We got the recent endorsement of Kansans for Life, as well as the National Right to Life. That joined the Farm Bureau endorsement, the Kansas Livestock Association endorsement, the Bob Dole endorsement. So certainly the endorsements are rolling in. The crowds we're getting as we've been out and about have actually probably doubled and tripled. And, yes, we're practicing our social distancing and no more than 20 people in a room. A lot of things we've been doing outside as well whenever possible. So we're catching a lot of momentum. Our grassroots, that seed that we planted last year, we went to all 105 counties last year. Those seeds we planted, they're coming up now, getting close to harvest time.
Okay. Well, good luck to you going forward, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Brandon. God bless everybody, and I'm counting on a K-State football season this year.